more and more suspicious that perhaps Mrs. Yount has no knowledge of any of this activity, since Ms. Tootin wouldn't give a phone number for Miss Yount and did in fact say that Sherry is again changing her number so nobody can reach her. She did, however, catch herself in time to realize she had just told on herself and said that during her travels, Mrs. Yount could reach her at various locations to give her a different contact number. Ms. Tootin also indicated that she thought Mrs. Yount no longer used Mr. Reef as her attorney, that a new attorney had been acquired for this purpose, and who was in touch with, among others, George Green. Mr. Christie says he told her that there could definitely be criminal charges brought against her and others involved for these flagrant violations of the law with intent to theft. In what Mr. Christie described as frantic defense, Miss Tootin said something to the effect that he wasn't her, Yount, agent any longer. Mr. Christie reported that he told her that had better not be so, because every incorporation regulation would have to have been broken to pull that one off. She really got nervous and got off the phone. This did, however, cause Mr. Christie, who was already in the process of getting replacement records for the three named corporations, to have a search run. We do not yet have factual dates, so we'll generalize the circumstances as we understand them for the purposes of this document. Sometime in late summer, August or September of this past year, 1995, without the permission, knowledge, proper paperwork, or notification to any parties to the corporations involved, someone did attempt to transfer the corporation, listing false officers and directors, to a Nevada incorporation agent in the area of Reno, Nevada. There was no mention of, nor contact with, nor permission of transfer from Nevada corporate headquarters or any agent thereof, nor with the officers and directors. It was at this time that Mr. Green and George Abbott began to tell his, Green's, correspondence audience that he now had all the control to put the Institute into receivership and would be the one representing all who would join with him. He also informed one Rod Entz that he had all the documents he needed and did in fact thank Mr. Entz for his cooperation. This was the same time that Mr. Entz was asked to vacate the farm whereat he was residing. This gave cause to do a bit of addition and subtraction, and it should be documented here that those conclusions are: at about the same time, Mr. Entz was at Eckers asking some information regarding corporations involved with the farm. Mr. Ecker, with Mr. Neal and Mr. James present, got out his personal computer, which was used almost exclusively for corporation records. It was noted at the time that Mr. Ecker made an effort to keep all incorporation matters, resolutions, etc., separate from all the other documents in the files, and that since Mr. Ecker's computer was almost exclusively Mrs. Ecker's computer was almost exclusively for her writing, she too would use that particular computer for corporation minutes or letters, if at all possible. This was specifically so there would be no confusion of business records with those of corporations. In early summer of 1995, Mr. Entz was seen by several people entering the residence of the Eckers. He was known to have been alone in the office area, but left without speaking with anyone in the office until he exited the lower level and entered his vehicle and drove rapidly away. He was seen carrying something by a man working outside who did in fact speak to him, at which point Entz stumbled and asked, "Where is everybody?" This man watched him then drive away. It was, in retrospect, the same period of time as a concerted effort was made by the Entz family to discredit and get rid of that particular man. Within an hour of this visit, it was discovered that the bank packet was missing and a time segment could be isolated specifically by others who had come, received funds from the packet, and left. It is strange that only the Ents knew how much money that packet contained and blurted it out in public while denying the theft. The amount was a deliberate entrapment secret. In addition, it was soon realized that the personal computer with the corporate records was also missing. The entire house was searched and was not found. In the following week, a known person did break into the kitchen of the dwelling and did take some things from the upstairs area along with a transformer for the computer, which was not attached. It seems quite strange that shortly after the computer was missing, Mr. Green suddenly stated that he had all he needed to now destroy the Institute and the Eckers. This may also clarify why Rod Ants pointed at and shouted at Brent Moorhead while being photographed loading and taking the farm equipment unlawfully, that, and when the real shit hits the fan, you are going to get it. How interesting. This data loss is not, however, a problem except for logistics of referencing files, for all prior records are in hard copy at NCH, copies are being faxed for reference back here. It is time-consuming, but neither party wants to part with critical records nor have them bouncing back and forth between the locations without security. Because of the serious and different nature of these corporations, ongoing records were immediately sent to NCH, so back records are available and integrated records are being compiled and being handled through the Law Center for documented continuity, security, and authenticity. It is suggested that the likelihood of Ents Ends making such a clandestine move to another agent might well be considered and investigated with a corporation named Challenge Met, which also holds an interim transfer note from Phoenix Institute. It has been rumored that Mr. Ends was entering Mr. Green's suit for receivership using that amount of funding as a resource. It is understood that NCH is doing further investigations into the matters involved here, has notified authorities, and is prepared to draw criminal complaints against the parties identified, as well as to bring charges against additional parties as verified and further identified. All of the parties are not yet known, so names may not appear until such time as more information can be validated. It is noted that, for the record, Mr. Christie is forwarding more documents, and we should have them available in the express mail by Monday or Tuesday. There are some very important papers and resolutions regarding Mrs. Yount, who telephoned asking for secrecy and stating she was afraid of George Green and that she had returned from her visit to Las Vegas and Tehachapi. She had returned to find her corporation documents in disarray, coins missing, and her side agreements with the Institute also missing. She was afraid that if these fell into the wrong hands, there would come terrible things against the Institute and that she would lose everything, as Green continued to tell her. Mr. Christie has the documentation of those concerns and the protective measures taken at the time. A meeting was requested and called for a joint session of the PI Board of Directors and Advisors with special attendees for 10 o'clock this date, January 18th at 10 a.m. in the meeting room at the Apple Center. We have also asked that any recipients of any documents from Tootin or Green be present if possible. This latter may be difficult on such short notice, so another meeting will be set for Sunday, January the 21st, to again have an update on these matters. It is therefore resolved that copies of other minutes, resolutions, and incorporation records in NCH files would be faxed to complete the records in this location for the use of the various corporations and legal counsel. Most records are available with the correspondence backup files in this location, and the only missing portions are those that have no hard copy but which were filed on the data disk of the missing computer. All hard copy originals are always held at NCH. Resolved, at the joint meeting later this morning, there will be a discussion of possible actions, desired input from Phoenix Institute, CLC, etc., and then on Sunday another short update meeting will be called just prior to a general meeting to celebrate John Schrepfer's 76th birthday. John is again demanding that his own case be brought to court, his property returned from his ex-wife, and some kind of justice gained from the parties who so sorely damaged him. This subject will not be integrated into this upcoming meeting, but it is considered valid and viable for the Institute to include his case within theirs because George Abbott has used him and his corporation as one of his clients, desiring the receivership of the Institute. It is mentioned here to point out that these parties working with Green Abbott are also working against John Schrepfer. There being no further business to come before the meeting, it was adjourned at 8:12 a.m. Signed, E.J. Ecker, Director, Doris J. Ecker, Director. Certification. I, Doris J. Ecker, Secretary of Nevada Corporation, do hereby certify that the above are the minutes of the Director's meeting held on January 18th, 1996. Doris J. Ecker, Secretary.
Probably the only thing left to do is just to entered into the record that these will be turned over to the Constitutional Law Center and will also be entered into the records of both corporation and the business records of the Institute. And we would appreciate having Nora's, since she's not here, Nora's minutes, and we will put the tapes from both today and on Thursday in the file, and they'll suffice as minutes. And I believe, EJ, that we should send copies of these tapes to Mr. Christie. Is there any discussion that anybody would like to have? There is quite frankly such a whirlwind in my brain that I think God said it would be this way. I don't think I believed him. But I want to say to everybody here that I'm grateful. And man, I'm telling you, my knees are going to get sore thanking God. He has not let us slip once. And all those times, you know, when you didn't want to bother to make this record or that one, or well, this was a social event or whatever, I am so glad that he said it will be done right. There will be no fudging. There will be no playing with any corporation. People, it is there to use. It is there to learn. If you abuse these corporations, you're going to suffer the consequences. And when you start, quote, shifting off corporations, you have, I mean, that is the business of Nevada. That is the business. And it is not taken lightly. And just because someone comes in and says, well, I know that bunch over there, you know, it doesn't cut it. It doesn't cut it. It doesn't matter what we want. Once this has gone this far, and I suppose if I had a personal brother, I think everybody involved should look very, very carefully at the cause of this, who has done this, and it's time to start turning state's evidence. Now, it just flat is. I cannot, in my wildest imagination, see some little lady like Betty Tootin sitting in prison. But that's the magnitude of this crime. We are talking a lot of money. A lot. So is there any other business that ought to come before this meeting? I'm disappointed that Paul is not here because he and Jean... What are you doing back there resting? Well, then have you been here all the time?
No, I got here about a quarter after. Been here half hour.
Okay. Well, just you might want to listen to this to make sure we made no errors where we blamed you for everything.
Well, somebody's got to take it.
Okay. Well, you're the best one I know. Being no further business, we may as well adjourn the business meeting.
Oh, I got a question. How about exactly do you know of Ed Cleary's involvement in all this?
Well, he certainly. That's probably true. No, we don't know. Do you want to...
Doris?
Yes.
I'd just like to say, I'm sure I'm speaking for more than just myself, that I certainly appreciate what you and EJ are doing and those you've brought in to help and train in corporation matters. We support you 100%, but there are just certain things that some of us, for what we may know, we don't know. And we can support you in any way we can, but we thank you for what you do so conscientiously.
Well, thank you. I'm grateful that it's been demanded of us.
Yes, we do thank you very much. Yes, they're here.
Well, I believe that I can sit here, and I don't want to make this as part of this meeting, EJ, so if you wouldn't mind, I'd just like to say a little bit to
correct words are off the record.
Thank heavens we have a clandestine gentleman here who can give us such advice. All right, we're going to conclude this portion of the meeting and also stop this particular tape. And when we begin taping again, it'll be with the commander. So this business meeting will now be adjourned. The time is about 2:45, Sunday afternoon, January 21st, 1996.
I believe what has...
This is January the 21st, 1996, and we've just concluded a business meeting, and we're getting reorganized now to greet the commander. I'm sure he'll come aboard when you hear the whistle.
I am aboard, but I don't whistle.
With your gills?
With my gills. Thank you, EJ, for attending the meeting. These are things that have to be handled. There aren't any ways to responsibly escape. It would be nice, I know, for you ones from time to time just to take off. Just to say I've had enough. But that's not our mission, that's not our purpose. And when God makes a commitment, it's going to happen. And ones who share with us are not going to pay the price of others' indiscretions. These are lessons we all have to learn one time or another. We're going to talk a little bit this morning about religions, church, politics, etc. There are just a few notations I want to make before we move into the subject, because I'm afraid we may not get right back to them. Rick has brought a tape that I think all of you would enjoy seeing after your cake break. It's in honor of John Schraefer today, because we didn't have one that said happy birthday on Thursday. It's happy birthday today. And I'm glad that ones at least can see some progress, even though it seems like patience has not paid. You don't know how much it has paid. You can't force rivers. You have to allow the unfolding. You can go forth and you can stir up your enemy and you can warn him and then you can pay for a long, long time. But there gets to be a limit to this. And yet ones make their own bed, write their own gift certificate back to themselves. And usually God honors those. So always be sure that your intent matches your lips, because that's what God hears. And I have a few little things that I want to take up. I have one beautiful lady in this is what we're about. This is what we're about. My name is, and I will leave it blank. My birth father, Williams, well, I can't read that either. I recently, in September the 27th, gave birth to a boy, David Michael Lynn Stanley. He was perfectly healthy, we thought. December 9th, we lost him to SIDS. The autopsy report hasn't come back yet, but they say it was SIDS. I realize that you are very busy. If you cannot respond to this letter, I will understand. But the doctors here have no explanation for SIDS. I don't understand it at all. But get this, people. His father, Staff Sergeant Gary Baker, was over in Saudi Arabia, the Gulf War. Could that be a cause? He has the Gulf War syndrome. If I order him a Gulf War kit, could we have another healthy baby, this time a healthy baby? Should we not try? Because of the SID's death, they do an autopsy right away. I called and asked them to wait 3 days, but they wouldn't. I need to know that he's okay. My grandma made the call for the violet flame to consume all earthly feelings so he could move on. Please respond, if at all possible. Thank you for your time. So you think you've got problems. Oh, goodness. Sudden infant death syndrome is the biggest, most heinous cover-up before the Gulf War syndrome. And yes, indeed, please, someone take this letter and send a copy of today's tape. If both cleanse themselves, go through the cleaning program, get themselves cleaned up so that their baby could thrive in a viral-free environment, there should be no infant deaths. These are caused from overwhelming, very frequently, from overwhelming toxic response. These are young children, and you see, those parasites must proliferate, and they will give off a toxin which will cause an anaphylactic response, and a baby will simply die. Or there will simply be a cardiac arrest. Usually the baby stops breathing because of respiratory problems. These do not really have time to show up on autopsy. Perfectly wonderful way to murder somebody. Because autopsy reports, they don't know what they're looking for. And in looking into this with both of these people, they are carrying the parasites. And you can see that after a few days, a seemingly healthy baby will go ahead and produce the fluke mechanism that harbors these viruses and lets them incubate. So they should be able to have perfectly normal, healthy children. The feedback from Peter and some of those that are now on the products are phenomenal. I don't know if that's good news or bad news, because we get so accustomed to ones screeching at us. And as Betty said, your products aren't all that good, neither is your bread recipe. Well, I'm sorry. We do the best we can. Well, so be it. The diseases are spreading. There have been 14 hantavirus deaths in California. It's terrible. Now let me just make a few references to your current events. Let us look at Chechnya and what just happened with the communist Russians, the Soviets, Yeltsin, that whole entourage. It's called murder. It is called murder on an international scale. There is a lot of information being fed out of Bosnia. You see, you're dealing in the Golden Crescent Triangle for drug dealings. When you get over into those areas, you have the Golden Triangle in Asia. You have the Golden Crescent in that area. And its hub has always been Israel manipulating in Afghanistan. So those things are coming to a head. And when it got really rough over in Asia, Armitage went then to the Golden Crescent area. And that was about the time that Bo Greitz was visiting here, because I laid that trip on him. And he was stunned. What do you know about that? And I said, I know everything about it. What would you like to know about it? You see, Armitage was the one that was the big manipulator over in Asia. So we have a lot yet to unfold. And those are things that now there's a lot of information out there. So it's just compiling it, and I don't need to do it. I will do what I can, because we must begin to attend the New Church Order, because that's where they got you, is in the religious arena, of which you can just mark it all off now, as did Thomas Paine. It's all, should I say it here, O.S.? It's beside the point. You may believe anything you want, but if you use reason, you will go back and realize that to conjure up a religion takes the supernatural, and therefore, as that being goes on through, you've got to have a supernatural exit so that nobody suspects you dreamt it up in the first place. And then the poor beings caught up in it are just exactly that, caught up in it. And you blithely go along, I believe every word in this book or that book. That's foolish. It's like reading the minutes. Everybody is going to interpret a little bit differently. And so we'll be focusing as much as possible on that aspect. But we're going to have to look into this Golden Crescent area. I would like for you to glean all the information, please, so you can run an ad for this particular volume. It just came across. It is a breakdown of Bilderberger's. It's an updated breakdown of Bilderberger's Trilats, CFR, and even the Skull and Bone Society. The Skull and Bone Society is the least updated. It's the hardest to get their records. And I don't care how many of you want it. You see, it's just listing of people and to what societies they belong. But you start looking for some of the ones like George Bush, and you find some very interesting things. Now, let's talk about George Bush just a second. You know, he's an old Texas boy. He's a Skull and Bones boy. He's got a son who is now governor of Texas. Now, you just had, on Wednesday or Thursday, Barbara Jordan died. That may not mean a whit to you. It's one of the most important things you will ever, ever hear. And to some of you, it means a lot. And I am not at liberty to go into that, but I would give a couple of you in this room full confirmation. And what did Barbara Jordan die of? Anyone in this room want to share with me?
They said pneumonia and complications of leukemia.
Yeah. I heard MS too.
Well, she was in a wheelchair. She died of overwhelming, fast-acting pneumonia. She was taken out. She was murdered. Now, the interesting thing is why would she have been murdered? Well, in the big high-level committees, they had to get rid of her. And so we'll leave it there. I just simply wanted it on this tape. I want to give confirmations to ones of you who know exactly why she was taken out and who did it. But a lot of things will be breaking loose now. That was an agreement that was made. I don't like people. You have to understand, I really don't like many people. Because there is, at these levels of assassination, there's no honor. There's no loyalty, with one exception. The same one given the responsibility of getting rid of her was also given the responsibility of getting rid of Dorma. And I hope you note she's still around. Anybody know what happened to your shuttle?
Notice they came back in the middle of the night where nobody could see them too well.
Isn't that interesting? I just wanted to make sure you all noted that. No follow-up yet. Just bad storms. So I'll withdraw and And if you would please read that. And everybody please listen. I mean, listen to this. This should have been the father of your country speaking.
Record number one from Hatton, Sunday, January 21st, 1996. Forward. Since life is what happens while you give everything you have to meeting obligations and responsibility and make other plans, we too are stuck in the bog of that which comes to impact our lives. Then, when the graduation testing comes along, one is always appalled at how well or how badly you experienced your lessons, and how well or how badly you learned those lessons. We all, as professors, have passers and flunkers, and occasionally an outstanding student or two who hold truth and also experience life in its myriads of complications and complexities. Anyone, however, who experiences by gathering with deceivers and works diligently in unlawful and unethical manners has automatically flunked. The consequences of that failure to move toward the lighted paths of rightness shall only bog more deeply into the traps of the leaders of the wrongful in your attempt to destroy another. The distraction and ruination brought upon self is rarely given sympathy. Yes, indeed, we know of many who fit into this category this very day, and we shall devote a full journal to that matter so that all can learn and see. This, however, is not the journal. Spiritual truth has little to do with churches, Bibles, and religion. Here's a quote from Thomas Paine. Of all the tyrannies that affect mankind, tyranny in religion is the worst. Every other species of tyranny is limited to the world we live in, but this attempts to stride beyond the grave and seeks to pursue us into eternity. Thomas Paine is the man unto which I offer my bended knee for striving without rest to bring America into enlightenment and offer you a true republic. Since I haven't space to adequately eulogize and honor this man, then perhaps, since we have been writing on church order, we might share his singular recognition as offered in his book, Age of Reason. Let us please just share his own thoughts as put to print, for it is long past time that you see it and think upon the wisdom offered. Quoting from The Age of Reason by Thomas Paine. It has been my intention for several years past to publish my thoughts upon religion. I am well aware of the difficulties that attend the subject, and from that consideration had reserved it to a more advanced period of life. I intended it to be the last offering I should make to my fellow citizens of all nations, and that at a time when the purity of the motive that induced me to it could not admit of a question, even by those who might disapprove the work. The circumstance that has now taken place in France of the total abolition of the whole national order of priesthood and of everything appertaining to compulsive systems of religion and compulsive articles of faith has not only precipitated my intention, but rendered a work of this kind exceedingly necessary, lest, in the general wreck of superstition, of false systems of government and false theology, we lose sight of morality, of humanity, and of the theology that is true. As several of my colleagues and others of my fellow citizens of France have given me the example of making their voluntary and individual profession of faith, I will also make mine. I will do this with all that sincerity and frankness with which the man of mind communicates with itself. I believe in one God and no more, and I hope for happiness beyond this life. I believe in the equality of man, and I believe that religious duties consist in doing justice, loving mercy, and endeavoring to make our fellow creatures happy. But, lest it should be supposed that I believe many other things in addition to these, I shall, in the progress of this work, declare the things I do not believe and my reasons for not believing them. I do not believe in the creed professed by the Jewish Church, by the Roman Church, by the Greek Church, by the Turkish Church, by the Protestant Church, nor by any church that I know of. My own mind is my own church. All national institutions of churches, whether Jewish, Christian, or Turkish, appear to me no other than human inventions set up to terrify and enslave mankind and monopolize power and profit. I do not mean to condemn those who believe otherwise. They have the same right to their belief as I have to mine. But it is necessary to the happiness of man that he be mentally faithful to himself. Infidelity does not consist in believing or in disbelieving. It consists in professing to believe what he does not believe. It is impossible to calculate the moral mischief, if I may so express it, that mental lying has produced in society. When a man has so far corrupted and prostituted the chastity of his mind as to subscribe his professional belief to things he does not believe, he has prepared himself for the commission of every other crime. He takes up the trade of a priest for the sake of gain, and in order to qualify himself for that trade, he begins with a perjury. Can we conceive anything more destructive to morality than this? Soon after I had published the pamphlet Common Sense in America, I saw the exceeding probability that a revolution in the system of government would be followed by a revolution in the system of religion. The adulterous connection of church and state has so effectually prohibited by pains and penalties every discussion upon established creeds and upon first principles of religion that until the system of government should be changed, those subjects could not be brought fairly and openly before the world, but that whenever this should be done, a revolution in the system of religion would follow. Human inventions and priestcraft would be detected, and man would return to the pure, unmixed, and unadulterated belief of one God and no more. Every national church or religion has established itself by pretending some special mission from God communicated to certain individuals. The Jews have their Moses, the Christians have their Jesus Christ, their apostles and saints, and the Turks have their Mohammed, as if the way to God was not open to every man alike. Each of those churches show certain books which they call Revelation, or the Word of God. The Jews say that their Word of God was given by God to Moses face to face. The Christians say that their Word of God came by divine inspiration, and the Turks say that their Word of God, the Quran, was brought by an angel from heaven. Each of those churches accuses the other of unbelief, and for my own part, I disbelieve them all. As it is necessary to affix right ideas to words, I will, before I proceed further into the subject, offer some observations on the word revelation. Revelation, when applied to religion, means something communicated immediately from God to man. No one will deny or dispute the power of the Almighty to make such a communication if he pleases. But admitting, for the sake of a case, that something has been revealed to a certain person and not revealed to any other person, it is revelation to that person only. When he tells it to a second person, a second to a third to a fourth, and so on, it ceases to be a revelation to all those persons. It is revelation to the first person only, and hearsay to every other, and consequently they are not obliged to believe it. It is a contradiction in terms and ideas to call anything a revelation that comes to us second hand, either verbally or in writing. Revelation is necessarily limited to the first communication. After this, it is only an account of something which that person says was a revelation made to him, and though he may find himself obliged to believe it, it cannot be incumbent on me to believe it in the same manner, for it was not a revelation made to me, and I have only his word for it that it was made to him. When Moses told the children of Israel that he received the two tablets of the commandments from the hand of God, they were not obliged to believe him, because they had no other authority for it than his telling them so. And I have no other authority for it than some historian telling me so. The commandments carry no internal precepts, such as any man qualified to be a lawgiver or a legislator could produce himself without having recourse to supernatural intervention. When I am told that the Quran was written in heaven and brought to Muhammad by an angel, this comes too near the same kind of hearsay evidence and second-hand authority as the former. I did not see the angel myself, and therefore I have a right not to believe it. When also I am told that a woman called the Virgin Mary said or gave out that she was with child without any cohabitation with a man, and that her betrothed husband Joseph said that an angel told him so, I have a right to believe them or not. Such a circumstance required a much stronger evidence than their bare word for it, for we have not even this, for neither Joseph nor Mary wrote any such matter themselves. It is only reported by others that they said so. It is hearsay upon hearsay, and I do not choose to rest my belief upon such evidence. It is curious to observe how the theory of what is called the Christian Church sprang out of the tale of the heathen mythology. A direct incorporation took place in the first instance by making the reputed founder to be celestially begotten. The trinity of gods that then followed was no other than a reduction of the former plurality which was about 20 or 30,000. The statue of Mary succeeded the statue of Diana of Ephesus. Ephesus? I'm not sure what that is. The deification of heroes changed into the canonization of saints. The mythologists had gods for everything. The Christian mythologists had saints for everything. The church became as crowded with the one as the pantheon had been with the other, and Rome was the place of both. The Christian theory is little else than the idolatry of the ancient mythologists accommodated to the purposes of power and revenue, and it yet remains to reason and philosophy to abolish the amphibious fraud. Nothing that is said here can apply, even with the most distant disrespect, to the real character of Jesus Christ. He was a virtuous and an amiable man. The morality that he preached and practiced was of the most benevolent kind. And though similar systems of morality had been preached by Confucius and by some of the Greek philosophers many years before, by the Quakers since, and many good men in all ages, it has not been exceeded by any. Jesus Christ wrote no account of himself, of his birth, parentage, or anything else. Not a line of what is called the New Testament is of his writing. The history of him is altogether the work of other people, and as to the account given of his resurrection and ascension, it was the necessary counterpart to the story of his birth. His historians, having brought him into the world in a supernatural manner, were obliged to take him out again in the same manner, or the first part of the story must have fallen to the ground. The resurrection and ascension, supposing them to have taken place, admitted of public and ocular demonstration, like that of the ascension of a balloon, or the sun at noonday, to all Jerusalem at least. A thing which everybody is required to believe requires that the proof of evidence of it shall be equal to all, and universal. And as the public visibility of this last related act was the only evidence that could give sanction to the former part, the whole of it falls to the ground because the evidence never was given. Instead of this, a small number of persons, not more than 8 or 9, are introduced as proxies for the whole world to say they saw it.